Samahanta chakkhavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajasa sunantu sagamokadam dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda namo tassa bhagavato arahato samaha sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samaha sambuddhassa namo tassa bhagavato arahato samaha sambuddhassa. Okay, so today I would like to continue yesterday's talk. Yesterday we talked about how the notion of self occurs. And the notion of self occurs due to clinging, right? Not without clinging. And we also talk about clinging to what? Clinging to five aggregate in ultimate sense. But in the conventional sense, clinging to self, right? Clinging to self. And why we also talk about why we cling to five aggregate or why we cling to self? Because it gives satisfaction, right? And because it gives a sense of security. Without clinging to anything, you just don't know how to live the world. You need to cling to something for you to feel that is existent. Self is exist. And self is preserved. The self-preservation. With that, you want to preserve the self so that you feel secure, then you feel happy. And so this self is only conventional truth. It's your own mental projection. It's not real. What is real? What is real? Yes, five aggregates are real. Self is just a conventional term. It's a notion. It's a view only. You view things as self. It's a view. It's not things that actually exist. Okay? And so for many people, when they heard about the teaching of non-self, and they start to have fear. Therefore, Buddha said, the idea of I may not be, I may not have, it's no self. I will be annihilated. It's very frightening for worldling people. Not for those who understand the Dhamma well. For worldling people who have never heard before non-self. Throughout his life, he clinged to the permanent self. Suddenly, he heard this non-self. That Dhamma is not inspiring for him at all. Even though for Buddhists who understand theoretically non-self, and when they come to actual practice and they cannot find a self, they also end up crying. They end up crying. They need to adjust how to live without a permanent self. Even during Buddha's time, there was a wanderer ascetic called Vachagota. Vachagota, one day he approached the Lord Buddha and asked him, "Venerable Sir, is there a self?" Buddha keep silent. Then there's no self. Buddha remained silent. And he was very disappointed. How Buddha not answer me? He was very disappointed and left. Ananda become very anxious. Ananda say, Venerable Sir, why didn't you answer him? It's so easy. I also can answer him. You know? And Buddha say that, if I say there is a self, this contradict with the true knowledge, Sabbe Dhamma Anatta. Right? Okay, now a question for you. Why would I say Sabbe Dhamma Anatta instead of Sabbe Sankara Anatta? Yeah, if I say there is self, this contradict with the true knowledge of Sabbe Dhamma Anatta. Why not Sabbe Sankara Anatta?
It's because sankhara is conditioned and sabbe dhamma anatta means there's no self in the conditioned or the unconditioned.
What is unconditioned?
The unconditioned, the nibbana.
Yes, very good. If Buddha says sabbe dhamma anatta, including nibbana. So nibbana is also anatta because nibbana is not produced by any condition. It's unconditioned. Asankata. Unconditioned. If sabbe sankhara anatta, all sankhara are produced by causes. Nibbana is not produced by causes. So nibbana is also not self. Otherwise people think I enter into nibbana. I inside the nibbana. Nibbana is very blissful. I enjoy the bliss. So they assume there's a cell inside Nibbana. Therefore, Buddha says, Sabbe Dhamma Anatta. And talk about this Nibbana, I remember one incident when I was in China, and Yogi asked, after Arahant died, where he goes? Where he goes? This is the thing many people concern because they want to go to blissful place. When Arahant dies, where he goes? And this person already assumed there is permanent self. The question is wrongly posed, right? Not correct already. So then I cannot direct tell him, right? I have to give him simile, like what Buddha gives. For example, a fire. A lamp or a fire is burning. Burning. So when the fire extinguishes, where the fire goes? Where the fire goes? Jonathan, where the fire goes?
Out. The suffering is at an end.
Very good. Now you have a right view. Okay. So we Buddha say, when fire extinguishes, where the fire goes? We cannot say the fire goes to the east, go to the west, go to the north, go to the south, right? We cannot say that. Why? Because the fire burns, the fire is burning. The fire burns, the wood burns depend on, the fire burns depend on fuel, right? Depend on fuel. The wood is fuel. So when the fuel extinguishes, the fuel sustains the fire. So when the fuel extinguishes, no more, finished, then the fire just blow out. No more. This means that when the causes is gone, the effect is gone. We cannot say where he goes. When you say where he goes, you already assume there's a permanent thing keep on going. You cannot see cause and effect. You do not see that fire is sustained by the causes. Right? And this is called annihilation view. Or eternal views. He wants something permanent stay there. So when I told this yogi this simile, and she told me that, sister, previously I strive very, very hard in order to become arahant. Because arahant state is bliss. Very blissful state. Having heard your explanation, I want to stop striving. I don't want to strive anymore because nothing else. No one enjoying the bliss. No one enjoying the peace. What should I strive? No. I'm going to stop my striving. So from this incident, you can see, losing the self is something very fearful for those who strongly cling to self. So this practical experience also told me, people cannot just accept there's no self. Around the samsara, they have been clinging to self for so many lifetimes, one after another. And suddenly you tell them no self. They cannot take it. Therefore, Buddha keep silent. Buddha don't want to answer. But Buddha explained to Ananda why he didn't want to answer. First, he said that if I say there is a self, this contradicts with the true knowledge that sabbe dhamma anatta, including Nibbana. There's no self in the Nibbana. Okay? And if I say there is self, Buddha said, if I say there is a permanent self, and this gocha gota, he already very confused. If I told him there's no self, he become even more confused. He said that formerly I have self, now I haven't got one. Then who am I? Who am I? So he will become even more confused. Out of compassion for him, I keep silent. Not the right time for him to understand no self. So this happened during Buddha's time as well. So the non-self doctrine is very difficult to accept for those who strongly cling to self. And please remember, self never exists. It's just a view. You view it having a self, but it never exists before. Right? What exists is your thinking, your consciousness, you feel your feeling, your elements, fire element, water element, wind element, at all. These are the things actually exist. And this exists arising and passing away according to condition, according to causes. Simply because we cannot see things as they really are, then we put all this in one unit, permanent self, one entity, one permanent substantiality. That's all. So it's just your mental projection. You view it as a self only. Doesn't mean that you view it as a self, then it exists. It's just a view. View is also conventional truth. Because your view can change. Right? Ultimate truth cannot be changed, cannot be reduced into smaller thing again. But view you can change. From wrong view, you change to right view. So from here, we come to understand. It's not the doctrine of non-self is, Buddha said, is very frightening for those who don't have the knowledge of Dhamma. But through my experience, for those who have knowledge of Dhamma, when they come to real realization, they also feel very frightening. Some stop practicing. Some after a while, okay, come back to the senses, accept it. Okay. So notion of self occurs due to clinging. Clinging to self in conventional truth. In ultimate truth, clinging to five aggregate. So come to this two truth or reality. Ultimate reality and conventional reality. We, living in this world, have to accept both. If we say that, no, I'm a pure Buddhist, I don't want conventional truth, I just want ultimate truth. So everybody appear to you as five aggregate. Everybody appear to you as Nama Rupa. So you want to communicate with Suki, they say, Nama Rupa, please come. I want to communicate with Jonathan. Nama Rupa, please come. Because everybody is Nama Rupa, then everybody come to me. How am I going to communicate with you? It becomes impossible, right? Therefore, Buddha also used conventional terms in order to teach the Dhamma. He say, in my previous life, I'm a Bodhisattva, right? Bodhisattva is conventional truth, right? But he has to use like that or is it otherwise in the previous life, Namarupa striving for? Everybody's Namarupa, then who is who? Who is that? It becomes very, the world will end up in confusion, right? Therefore, middle path. Don't go to extreme and use ultimate reality all the time and people think that something wrong with you. And for the progress of the Dhamma, don't cling to conventional truth, right? If you only think this is conventional truth, conventional truth is the end, then you will never progress in the Dhamma. Therefore, as a true practitioner, walk the middle path. When the time for you to use conventional truth, you use. When the time for you to discern ultimate truth, you discern ultimate truth. Only then you are walking the right path. Okay? Because some people's mind is very rigid. Very rigid. They only want to stay in conventional truth, then out of this world. Okay? So be more, let your mind, what they call soft, flexible, and with wisdom and understanding. Then you know how to live this world happily without clinging to conventional truth and without clinging to ultimate truth. Okay. Okay, come back to our topic. It's by clinging to five aggregate, the notion of I occurs. Okay, let us talk a little bit about five aggregate. Okay, before that, Puna Mata Niputta, To Ananda. Not to cling to five aggregate. For what reason? Then, Puna Mata Niputta said, question him, question Ananda. Is form impermanent or permanent? What's your answer? Okay, impermanent. Okay, how you see the form as impermanent? Because you answer according to theory, right? How to see the form as impermanent? First, we must understand, what is this form? What is this form? You should be able to answer me because we already studied. Otherwise, I feel very, very disappointed. Four elements, right? Form consists of four elements. So as I say, you keep on scanning and keep the whole body as one and keep on listening. Earth element, water element, fire element, wind element, Patthavi Dhatu, Apo Dhatu, Tejo Dhatu, Vayo Dhatu, in the body again and again, again and again. Then finally, all these elements will break down into thousands of particles. Or the whole body become bubbles. Bubbling, bubbles, when it forms, it vanishes immediately, and forms again, vanishes again, forms again, vanishes again. Therefore, it is impermanent. Through your practical inside knowledge, through right seeing, correct seeing, then you answer, form is impermanent. Not through theory. Okay? Since Ananda, they all have learned, practiced this meditation enough. So Mantali Buddha asked, is form permanent or impermanent? Then they immediately know, impermanent. So they answer, impermanent. So when you see the whole body breaking down, the four elements breaking down into particles arising and passing away, or like bubbles, forms and vanishing, then you feel it's impermanent. You want the process to stop. Don't arise, don't pass away. Or just arise and stay there. Don't pass away. No, I don't want to see. You know, it doesn't yield to your wishes, right? And as you constantly see the repeated arising and passing away, you have a sense of unsatisfactory, undesirable things, unsatisfactory. It's not what I want. This is called dukkha in the Pali term. So dukkha in Pali also means impermanent and void of self, void of lasting, devoid of permanent entity. It's called dukkha in Pali. And at this time, you see the whole body is devoid of lasting entity, devoid of something pleasant or something happy. Happiness, there's no happiness in the body. Happiness comes when you can control something, right? So at a time you feel the sense of unsatisfactory, undesirable, unwished for. This is called dukkha in the teaching of the Buddha. So being oppressed by constant arising and passing away is called dukkha. And so this yogi, when he sees his form, he sees his four elements, constant arising and passing away, he also feels dukkha. This is called viparinama dukkha or sankhara dukkha. Okay? If the body pain is called dukkha, dukkha. We have three types of dukkha. Dukkha, dukkha is referred to bodily pain. Then we have the dukkha due to change, the dukkha due to formations, the change of causes that cause the effect to change. So, and then Manta Niputta, Punna Manta Niputta continue to ask, is what is impermanent suffering can be regarded, is it fit to regard it as mine? This body belongs to mine. Yes or no? Through your experience, you know. Of course, no, because it keeps on arising and passing away. How it belong to mine? If it belongs to mine, also I don't want. I don't want something constantly arising and passing away, right? So it does not belong to me. So it shouldn't be regarded as mine with craving or this I am. If this body keep on, these particles, bubble, keep on arising, passing away, is this I am. Then this I am find no foothold to stand. Where is the foothold for this I am to stand, which this I am is constant arising and passing away. So it should not be regarded as this I am with conceit. And also, it should not be regarded as the is self. When we talk about self, it means unchanging entity, unchanging substantiality, who transmigrate from one place, one life to another life. It's called self, atta, atman, in Sanskrit. So you also cannot find there is any unchanging substantiality, unchanging entity, right? Through your own experience. Therefore, Punna Manta Niputta say, form is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is impermanent, subject to change, and unsatisfactory cannot be regarded as this is mine, this I am, this myself. So from here we can understand, it's very important to see impermanence in all sankhara. When you see the constant arising and passing away, then you understand dukkha. When you understand constant arising and passing away and dukkha, unsatisfactory, and you understand anatta. Anatta also refers to the process, not the self, not the permanent self, because the self never exists. It's your own mental projection. So anatta refers to the process. The whole process has no abiding entity. Okay, so through the practical experience, then Punna Manta Niputta teach form is impermanent, anicca, dukkha, anatta. So this is the first aggregate, form aggregate. Then the second one, feeling aggregate. What is feeling? If it feels, what is felt? It feels is called feeling. And this is feeling's characteristic. What is its function? The feeling feels the desirable aspect of the objects. What are the objects? In the teaching of the Buddha, we have six types of objects. What are they? What are they? Visible object, sound, smell, taste, tangible object, tangible which where you touch, you sense with your body consciousness. And the last one, mental object. So all these six types of objects has its taste, has their taste, has three tastes. Each object has three tastes. One is pleasant taste, a pleasant aspect of the object. For example, a beautiful woman. It's very pleasant to the man, right? Delicious food is very pleasant to the tongue. And the sweet voice is very pleasant to the ear. And the soft touch is very pleasant to the body. It's very pleasant to the body. And the fantasy is very pleasant to the mind. So each object has its pleasant aspect. And also, some object has its unpleasant aspect. For example, abusive speech is very unpleasant to the ear, right? Ugly woman is very unpleasant to man's eye. Bad smell is very unpleasant to the nose, and bitter taste may be unpleasant to the tongue. And a harsh touch, harsh object may be unpleasant to the touch. And all this miserable thinking, thoughts of restlessness is very unpleasant to the mind. But for those who like to indulge in restlessness, it's very pleasant. To me, it's very unpleasant. Restlessness is so unpleasant. It caused me so much suffering because it's all nonsense, right? So when you hear the abusive speech, who feels unpleasant? Jonathan, who feels unpleasant? When abusive words impinge to your ear, do you feel unpleasant?
I don't. The feeling is there.
Yes, very good. Now you have better and better right view. Yes, it's not you feel, it's that unpleasant feeling feels the unpleasant aspect of that abusive word. Right? If you can see in this way, then you are seeing correctly. You are seeing rightly. If you feel that I feel unpleasant, then you identify unpleasant feeling as myself already. This is called wrong view, wrong seeing, right? So whatever you taste, it's pleasant, it's just a feeling, pleasant feeling feels it. And it's a feeling aggregate. As we know, aggregate is not myself. It's not I, this I am not, it's not myself. So you must know, it's pleasant feeling that feels that pleasant aspect of the object. Whether it's visible object, sound, smell, taste, tangible or mental object. Whatever you feel pleasant or unpleasant or neutral is only the function of feelings that feels it. Pleasant feeling feels pleasant aspect of the object, unpleasant feeling feels the unpleasant aspect of the object, and neutral feeling feels the neutral aspect of the object. Just like you encounter a stranger. You don't have pleasant feeling and you don't have unpleasant feeling. At that time, what feeling you have? What feeling you have? Neutral feeling. So at that time, neutral feeling feels that when you meet with stranger, just neutral feeling. You don't say that no feeling at all. You say no feeling at all, that's not possible. Feeling is universal mental factors. It must be there all the time together with consciousness. And consciousness is there all the time. Therefore, feeling is always accompanied with consciousness all the times. Simply because neutral feeling is more subtle. That's why you thought you have no feeling. Okay, so this feeling aggregate. And feeling aggregate is so important. It becomes one subject of contemplation in the four foundations of mindfulness. We call contemplation on feeling, which I will teach next few days. Okay? So we must understand, in this five aggregate, there's one feeling that feels the pleasant aspect of the six objects. and they feel the unpleasant aspect of the six objects. They feel the neutral feeling of the six objects. So when you come to meal time, you feel pleasant. Don't think you are enjoying. Who enjoy the pleasant food? Who enjoy the delicious food? Suki, who enjoy the delicious food?
My feeling.
You mind your feeling?
Oh,
no, your view.
Sorry. So
your view is partially right and partially wrong.
to convey communication.
Yeah, it's good to mix up conventional and ultimate. You say that feeling, my, is it pleasant feeling? Don't say my pleasant feeling, okay? So pleasant feeling feels the delicious food. So today, mealtime, add more ingredients to your contemplation. Not only feel the four elements, also see how the pleasant feeling enjoy the food, not yourself. Okay? Remember, stick into your computer mind. Okay, okay, the third aggregate is what? Sanya Khanda. Huh? Sanya Khanda. Perception aggregate. Perception aggregate. Perception perceives the specific feature of the things so that it can remember next time. Just like first time when you see the bird, how can you recognize next time when you see the bird again, how you know it is bird? Therefore, perception, it perceives the specific feature of the bird. What the specific feature the bird has? Wings, right? Wings and flying in the sky. So perception perceive and keep it in a memory. Next time when you see it again, that perception comes up, pop up and recognize it. But we don't see in this way. We only see, I remember, I recognize. We identify perception as I, right? I recognize, I remember, I do not forget. Yeah. In fact, it's the perception perform its own function to memorize so that to remember next time. And perception plays the trick. Perception plays the trick. It perceives everything is happiness. Everything is beautiful. Everything is having a self. Everything has having an enduring entity and enduring self. Because since young, when we are born, right? When we are born, we cry for milk. And when mother put the milk into our mouth, into baby's mouth, then we feel very pleasant. We feel very pleasant. And next time, when we feel hungry, the baby feel hungry again, then the mother give him milk. And the baby feel pleasant again. Every time he tastes the milk, he feel pleasant. And gradually, then he think, this pleasant feeling is permanent. Right? Because every time he feel it as pleasant, then he think this pleasant is permanent. And from this pleasant, permanent, and comes from, I am enjoying this feeling. This permanent, pleasant feeling. I am the one who enjoy, who experience this permanent, pleasant feeling. So we are cheated by the perception. Because perception recognize, first time you taste it, it's very enjoyable. Right? Then you keep in the mind. It's enjoyable. It's enjoyable. So next time you taste it again, it's also enjoyable. Repeatedly feel the same thing, it becomes permanent. Then the idea of permanent comes. And therefore, this perception perceive what is happiness become permanent. And also, there must some since it, this person, the baby, cannot see the ultimate truth. He doesn't know, it's the feeling that feels, right? So he thought this is I, it's the enduring eyes who feels the pleasant. And this pleasant is permanent. So this is called perception. Perception play the trick. And once you perceive wrongly, it's uprooted in your mental stream. Once you perceive wrongly, and second time again, third time you perceive wrongly again, it becomes deep-rooted in your mental stream. And it takes difficult time to change. Therefore, when we come into Vipassana meditation, insight meditation, we want to change all the distorted or perverted perception. This perverted sanya vipalasa, this perverted or distorted perception, perceive thing as happiness, thing as permanent, thing as having a self, thing is beautiful. All these are wrong perception. We call perverted perception. This perverted perception do not see things according to the truth. So as Vipassana meditator, why should we keep on contemplate anicca, dukkha, anatta? Why should we keep on seeing perishing? And when you see arising and perishing, then you know suffering and you know non-self. So that we can change, correct our perverted perception, so that perception can perceive the true nature as they really are. Let me give an example. Let's say, in a farm, a hunter put a, how to call it, scarecrow. Put a scarecrow in the field to frighten the deer. Deer is very timid animal. When he first see a human being, when the deer sees human beings, he will run away, right? So when deer first see human being, then his perception, deer also got perception, right? So he perceive human being got one head, one trunk, two hands, two foot. So, and this, he perceive human being, the specific feature of human being, and keep in the memory. So next time, when he see the human being again, through his perception, he can recognize. So hunter, in order to frighten the deer, so he put a scarecrow in the field. And when the deer approached the farm, he saw this scarecrow, and he got very frightened. And he quickly ran away. So why he get frightened? Why the deer get frightened? Perception. Is he cheated? Because scarecrow is not a real person, right? But he thought it's a real person. So he is cheated by his own perverted perception. Because previously he perceived it wrongly. Then he was cheated by his own perception and run away. So once you perceive wrongly, it takes a long time. And every time the deer come to farm, he will be frightened by seeing this unreal person. So he will be repeatedly be cheated by his own perception. Therefore, once you perceive wrongly, it takes great effort to change your perception. This is called perception aggregate. And this perception aggregate is also impermanent. If you keep on taking perception as object of your contemplation, it's also like feeling arising and passing away. Therefore, Buddha said perception is like mirage. It's not real, not substantial. It's illusion. Okay, so this perception aggregate. Number four aggregate is what? Formation aggregate. Sankhara khanda. Sankhara khanda is a little bit difficult to explain. Let me quote from Khanda Sanyutta from Sanyutta Nikaya. How Buddha explained formation aggregate or sankhara khanda or fabrication aggregate, translated by Thanissaro, Ajahn Thanissaro. And Buddha said, what is fabricated aggregate, Sankhara Khanda? It fabricates things. It fabricates fabricated things. Therefore, it's called fabricated aggregate. No one can understand this sentence. No one will understand. It takes me a long, long time to investigate. What does it mean? And it takes me a long, long time, and I come up with one which I think beautiful simile to explain this sentence. So what is fabrication? It fabricates fabricated things. Therefore, it's called fabrication. Okay. Now, let us analyze this fabricate. Fabricate means construct or produce. In all our mental stream or in all our mental factors, which mental factor can construct things, can produce effect? Fabricated things. So in 52 mental factors, there's one can create new things, can construct new things and produce its effect, which is volition or karma. So in the teaching of the Buddha, only one is responsible, one mental factor responsible to construct things and to produce things, which is called volition. But volition only can produce effect and can produce fabricated things when it is accompanied by craving. When it is not accompanied by craving, volition cannot construct things, cannot fabricate fabricated things. Right? So fabrication means hidden by volition, accompanied by craving and ignorance. Only then this fabrication can construct or can fabricate fabricated things. Okay, now the next question, what is fabricated things? Now you understand fabrication, right? Understand or not? So what is fabricated things? Usually fabricated things are the things we strongly attach. We don't fabricate things we don't like, right? We fabricate things we strongly attach to. So what you strongly attach to? Tell me, please. Exactly. Excellent. Five aggregate. So a fabrication fabricate fabricated things. These fabricated things are the five aggregate. So fabrication, formation, construct or create karma that produce five aggregate. This is what Buddha meant. It takes me a very long time to understand what Buddha trying to say. I don't like to read a sentence which I cannot understand. I got to spend time and investigate until I thoroughly understand the sentence. Okay. So, in this sense, Buddha said, fabrication fabricate form as a fabricated things. Fabrication fabricate five aggregates. So first, fabrication, sankhara, fabricate form for the sake of form. A fabrication, so form is a fabricated things. Because form is what we attach to, right? For example, when a man's eye come to contact with beautiful woman, owing to that pleasant contact, eye contact, so a pleasant feeling thrill his whole body. The body become very excited. So at this time, do you feel pleasant of having the body to experience that excitement? Yes or no?
None of them are going to answer the question.
I think it's a common sense. It's not. It's just a physical reaction. It's nothing to be ashamed of, right? It's a physical reaction. You just know it, then let it pass away. Why you take it as a self?
There's pleasantness, but it's not me.
Yes, good. That's good. That's what I want to hear. More than you are too conservative. It's just a fact, right? So when a man's eye, okay, and a woman's eye, same, come to contact with a good-looking man, you have the same feeling, isn't it? You don't have to deny it. So when a man's eye come into contact with a beautiful, you know, woman, because of that pleasant eye contact, right? Pleasant eye contact, because due to contact, because of contact, feeling arises. This is a natural process. It's not you want or you don't want. It's a natural process. So the pleasant feeling arises, and this pleasant feeling thrills the whole body, and whole body becomes excited. Of course, not excited like dancing or what. Just feel pleasant feeling, right? And at that time, do you attach that pleasant feeling, pleasant physical feeling or not? Yes or no? Yes. I don't have to wait for you to answer. It's almost automatic, spontaneous. It's nothing to shame of, right? It's automatic. So at that time, just like when you eat the food is so pleasant, at that moment, the mind get attached to it. It's the same thing. It's a natural process, nothing to be ashamed of, right? So at the time you feel pleasant feeling throughout the whole body, and you have the attachment to it, to that pleasant feeling, and you have the desire to experience it again, right? Just like you eat the pleasant, the delicious food. Once you taste the delicious food, you will not say, stop, enough. No one will say, stop, enough. You want a second, you want a another. This is called natural reaction of your physical needs. So at the time you develop desire and attachment to it, and at that moment fabrication is fabricated. At the time fabrication start to fabricate the form aggregate, start to produce new four elements in the body. That's why your element change, and you get very excited. Before your eye encounter with one beautiful woman, the body is in one stage. After encountering with beautiful woman, because of that pleasant feeling through the whole body, and you desire to experience it again, at that moment, that fabrication, that karma, mental karma, already fabricate form aggregate in the body, the four elements. Therefore, you see the four elements in the body change. This is called Chittajya Rupa, the element produced by mind. Okay? And also karma. And that karma can produce pleasant four elements on the spot, as well as produce new four elements in the future, new form aggregate in the future. This is what I mean. Fabrication produce a fabricated things. Fabrication means karma or volition accompanied by craving, accompanied by desire, immediately produce form aggregate. Therefore, form aggregate is a fabricated things. Is it clear or not? Oh, I'm tired.
So, does that mean if you reduce your intake of food, like keeping the 8 precepts all the time, or if monks and nuns keep many, many precepts, does that mean if you do it for a long time?
Yes. Your desire becomes less and less. Of course. Yeah. So is it clear or not? Is it clear? Jiahong? Kiran? Ben? Good. Okay. Otherwise, I get tired.
So could fabricated things, I know like it's the five aggregates, but could it also be considered fabricated things are just results of karma?
Fabricated things are, that's why it can be just now I mentioned, it can be citta rupa or kamaja rupa. It can be result of karma, because anything, any volition that is accompanied by craving will produce karma. Right? Citta produce pleasant, karma produce in the future. Okay? So fabricated. So,
could I ask? This is probably wrong. Is it volition that turns feeling into craving?
We cannot say like that. Because of feeling, craving arises. Craving arises. Yes. A craving arises for ordinary person. Cannot say automatically. If there's pleasant feeling arise in you, if you can apply mindfulness and wisdom and see the feeling arising and passing away, then that pleasant feeling will not turn to craving. So cannot say automatically. Without contemplation, it's automatically. With contemplation, you bring that pleasant feeling to cessation. Stop there. So it will not turn to craving. Okay?
What was your question? Would you repeat the question again, please?
I would rather repeat the answer. The answer was better than the question. I was asking about moving from feeling to craving and whether that were a volitional act.
Okay.
When there is craving, it's called volitional act. Feeling is not called volitional act.
Oh.
When that feeling turns to craving, it's called volitional act, mentally, not yet put into action. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
when she asked, you say it will be less desirable.
Mm-hmm.
So, still have the same pleasant feeling, but just you
you
just say
you're mindful.
So, you don't get attached to your pleasant feeling. So, the feeling is still the same.
Arahant also experience pleasant feeling.
Okay.
But arahant do not attach to pleasant feeling. When arahant partake the food, you know, when the food, delicious food come to contact with the tongue, pleasant feeling arises. This is automatic. But arahant get very detached to it. But arahant also has pain. As long as you have the body, you have the pain. So arahant also has pain. But when the pain arises in him, he detach himself. Of course, it's no self. Huh? He detach his mind with the pain. So he see pain as pain, nothing to do with self. That's what he can bear.
So if you take a bite mindfully, with every bite saying pleasant feeling arising.
When I teach contemplation on feeling, then you know how to contemplate. Huh? When the pleasant feeling arises, you just know pleasant feeling as pleasant feeling. Pleasant feeling is not myself. You use this same contemplation again and again until you get very familiar with it, then you don't have to contemplate the way, so long way. Immediately, you know, it's just a pleasant feeling. It's nothing to do with self. Yes.
You see, when I see the fog of color, it really is pleasant. And I...
Color during Anapana?
The fog of color.
Oh,
the mountain fog
okay.
color.
Okay.
So my thought goes like, I think it's okay to think they're beautiful as long as I don't go all over to search them.
That's why I say sometimes you need to leave the world with concept and ultimate reality. you cannot live ultimate only seeing. Sometimes to enjoy the pleasant of the mountain, of the color, is to relax the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the mind don't so tense up. You can enjoy, no problem. Okay?
I'm silent. So the fabrication happened after feeling. Can you say that?
No. Fabrication, we cannot say like that. And in fact, if according to Abhidhamma, almost... together, but according to dependent origination, after feeling craving, right? After feeling craving, according to dependent origination, only after feeling then fabrication.
Okay.
Okay. So let me continue last one. So we say, what is fabrication? So how should you answer? What is fabrication? Fabrication is hidden by volition accompanied by craving and desire. Because when volition is accompanied by craving and desire, only then it produces karma, right? So fabrication fabricated things. What is that fabricated things? Bear in mind, the things we strongly cling to, which is five aggregate. Therefore, fabricated things, which is five aggregate. And I have given you an example how the fabrication fabricate form, which is fabricated things, right? And now I'm going to give another example how the fabrication fabricate feeling, which is also fabricated things. Feeling aggregate is fabricated things. Taking the same example, when your mind comes to contact with the pleasant object, you feel very pleasant. Or when your eye comes to the different color in the four seasons, you feel very pleasant. Do you attach to that pleasant feeling? Most people, if you don't contemplate, of course we get attached. But that attachment has less harmful compared with attached to opposite sex, right? So less harmful. So when the eye comes to contact with a pleasant visible object, then there's a pleasant feeling arise in one. And one immediately get attached to that pleasant feeling. When you get attached to that pleasant feeling, then fabrication start to fabricate feeling. You desire to have feeling again. So whenever you have desire to have it again, the karma is there already. The karma start to create feeling. So that next time you can enjoy the same feeling again. You think it's same feeling. So next time you will have feeling for you to enjoy pleasant things. You will have feeling aggregate, mental factor of feeling in you, in conventional truth, to experience the pleasant aspect of all senses. Because you long for it. Because the craving and desire long for having pleasant feeling in the next time. The moment you have that desire and craving, then the feeling aggregate is fabricated. From moment to moment. No need to wait until next life. Too far. From moment to moment. Therefore, these fabrications fabricate five aggregates from moment to moment. I don't have to give you five similes. Give you two, enough for you to understand the other three. That's how fabrication fabricate fabricated things continuously. So from every moment, the moment you have desire to see, desire to hear, desire to think, desire to taste, desire to touch, then that fabrication already fabricate five aggregate from moment to moment. Okay, is it clear? Yes.
So let's say because the cause of that arising of pleasant feeling was a visible object, say with the fall colors, will that volition based on that pleasant feeling, will it produce specifically
I of course.
Like that's the result of
that. Yeah, this called fabrication produce consciousness aggregate together with feeling. Without I, how can you see? When you cannot see how the pleasant feeling will arise born of eye contact, right? Same consciousness feeling, because I do not explain the five aggregate. Same. So when the eye comes to contact with beautiful force or beautiful man or beautiful woman, so not only the fabricate feeling aggregate as well as the eye is form aggregate together with consciousness aggregate, because it's consciousness, eye consciousness sees. It's not an eye faculty. It's a consciousness that sees. So it also fabricate consciousness aggregate. Okay? Five aggregate together. Okay, Stephen? Yeah.
Besides craving and desire, can sankharas then be created by aversion and repulsion?
Of course, of course, of course. That's unwholesome karma, yes. Okay, any other question? Right view.
No, this question. So you have referred several times in the last few days to consciousness stream. Now, is this aggregation, fabrication of the five aggregates, the source for that stream, that consciousness stream? So that's breaking down what you mean when you refer to consciousness stream. So...
Once more.
Okay, I'm wondering if you've referred several times to this phrase consciousness stream, and what attaches to it. And I'm wondering if you just now explain the mechanism for that attachment.
So what's your question? Or anyone get it and tell me.
Your question is, because like during
Tell his question to me first, let me answer.
That's what I'm trying to do. Okay. In the last couple of interviews where you mentioned several times of consciousness stream.
Yes.
But you didn't mention how this occurred. How this happened, this stream got generated, got made up.
So
Jonathan is trying to confirm, you just explained to us, this is how it happened. So you just explained the mechanism behind it, how the stream got generated.
Yes.
I think men understand men better. Yes, it's true. Partly because of that volition and craving, that because fabrication also fabricate consciousness aggregate. Because I have no time, I only explained two. The remaining two I did not explain. So the fabrication also, as Maureen say, when your eye sees a visible object, and eye consciousness arises, seeing the visible object, then you feel really pleasant. And of course, that fabrication also fabricate consciousness, so that you can see again, so the eye consciousness can see again. And that consciousness, not only consciousness, I think the feeling all are arising one after another in a stream. Not only consciousness, the other aggregates also arising and passing away. But consciousness is a stream, thoroughly mentioned in Abhidhamma. So it's the mechanism that work behind that.
But that's just a part of it, right? Because the consciousness is the king of the whole mental factors. So it interacts with the volition as well, right? That make this stream continues, Now this is just one side of what you explained.
I don't want to make Jonathan more confused. That understand is enough for him. I don't want to go to Abhidhamma. Okay. Okay. Any other question?
It's like a giant robot.
Giant
robot. It's like the mind is a robot. It's like automatically trying to continuously produce.
Karma. Yes, that's why you've got to train it not to let it continuously to produce karma. You've got to train it and turn it into wisdom, right? Don't let it go the way like ordinary person do. Therefore, you practice mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom to turn it the other way around, to see things as they really are. Okay, I think I know you finished my talk. Tomorrow, continue again, okay? You can go. Mm-hmm.